talking to me?
Funny like I'm a clown, I use you.
Here's Johnny.
He's looking at you, kid.
We're on a mission from God.
Go ahead. Make my day.
I'm going to make him an offer again with you.
Good morning, and welcome to the Weird Movie Geeks podcast. Today is May 8th. I am Tom Stockman.
Jim Batts.
Kate Marquis.
And we're here to talk about movies, because that's what we do every Monday morning. Let's not waste time. We've got important things to talk about. The weather was sure nice this weekend, though.
Boy,
Oh, sure, yes.
All right, let's start with the top 12. You know, the number two and the number one both co-star Kurt Russell.
Amazing.
Wow.
Yes. The guy's on a roll.
Let me tell you. And then next week, his lady will be in one of the top five, I'll bet you.
Yeah. We'll see. Let's see. Number 12 was Lost City of Z. You guys saw that. It was still in the top 12, barely. It made 1.1. Born in China. Jim reviewed that one here 2 weeks ago.
Yeah.
Made 1.2 for number 11. Smurfs, The Lost Village was number 3 with 1.8 million.
Surprising.
Going in Style. We saw that. That was number 9, 1.9. Yeah. Gifted was number 8 with 2.1.
Yeah.
Bahubali, The Conclusion. Great Indian Films Studio. I don't know much about that. Somebody texted me and said that all his Indian coworkers are excited about this movie.
Is that here in St. Louis?
Yeah,
somewhere?
Oh yeah. It's at least one theater in St.
Louis. Yeah, is it playing Chesterfield?
It was like number 3 or 2 last week. Yeah. We weren't here last week to talk about this, but yeah, this Indian movie is a box office smash.
Oh yes,
Bahubali. I know nothing about it. These Indian movies, they always last like 2 hours and 45 minutes, too.
Really?
Yeah, all of them do. Huh. The Circle, Kate saw that. We'll review that here in a minute. Was number 6 with $4.0 million. Beauty and the Beast, still in the top 5 with $4.9 million. How to Be a Latin Lover. I kind of want to see that.
Is that here? Is
that that's
here?
Showing here.
It's showing
at several theaters.
Yeah. It was at Ronnie's last
it was
time.
It was number 2 or 3 last week, too, I think. Or it was in the top 5. Boss Baby. I saw Boss Baby a couple weeks ago.
Yeah, I saw it too.
I saw it last Saturday.
Boy, that's really holding on in that top
is.
5 spot. I'm really surprised at how about, you know, good legs that Boss Baby has. I tell you.
It's Alec Baldwin. He's a box office gold.
That's it.
And then Fate of the Furious, $8.5 million, good for number 2. And Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2. Made $145 million.
The big surprise of the weekend.
Yeah.
Not really.
Didn't something make over $200 million? Was that Star Wars?
Well, probably. I know that Beauty and the Beast did a little bit better in its opening weekend. I think it did $175 million in its opening weekend here in the States. But, you know, that Galaxy had been playing at least a week or so in Europe and foreign markets before we got it. So it's already taken in about $500 million.
Yeah. So. You guys saw it. I saw it over the weekend. I saw it Saturday night at the IMAX out at Chesterfield 3D.
Hey.
And you guys saw it Tuesday night at the Galaxy.
Yes, and I saw it again
How was
last
that
night.
Screening? How did that screening go?
It was an endurance test, to be sure.
Well, what
and
I heard is the theater loaded up the 2D version, is what I heard.
Which would have been fine if they could have started that on time.
And then they passed. Then everybody got 3D glasses. So when they realized that they didn't have the 3D version, it took an hour and 15 minutes to load up the 3D version.
Well, apparently, from what they said, it's like they tried to load up the 3D, and then they tried to go back to the other, and they couldn't get either to work for a while. Although they finally did.
Finally.
And so it was the 3D version.
So the 2.5-hour movie became a 4-hour-long
ordeal.
Hour and a half wait.
Yeah.
No, hour and 15, sorry.
That didn't happen when I saw it at the Chesterfield.
But then again, you were paying your hard-earned money for that.
True. And I had my 16. I didn't go to the screening because I had my 16mm double feature night.
Yes. I hope that
was a lot
well.
Of fun. Oh, it was great.
Yes.
All right. Well, let's see. We got a bunch of movies to review and a bunch of movies to preview and some stuff like that. I guess this weekend, Guardians will probably be number one again, unless King Arthur catches up to it when does Snatched open?
Snatched opens Friday, along with King Arthur, and a couple of indie flicks open. But it's going to be Guardians again,
probably.
At least for another week, until the alien pops out of the box office chest.
There we go.
So,
all right, well, let's start with these reviews. How about a review of The Circle?
You got the job at The Circle.
Have a drink, have a good time, and stay excited. You're at The Circle.
Hello, May. How are you?
Jared here. I'll be doing your training.
When I first started, it took me a few weeks to really get the hang of it. Believe me, you're doing fine.
You should come visit me at work sometime.
You might think I was there to clean the toilets.
Okay, the circle starts Tom Hanks. Is that right?
Well, it's not according to the trailers. Yeah. I was surprised when I first saw the trailers.
He has a major role, but I would say it stars Emma Watson. It's really about her character. He's her boss. He's the boss. He's a kind of Steve Jobs type character, but the company he runs is kind of more like a expanded Facebook. It's a technology company. This is in the near future. And she has a friend who works there that gets her in for an interview, and then she gets this job there, and she's like over the moon. This is her dream job. It's everything she ever wanted. And like a lot of, you know, enthusiastic employees, she's going to do anything they ask her to do.
Does it take place in the future?
In the near future. It's very, very close to now. But, you know, just enough. The technology is just a little more advanced, and it's a kind of total surveillance thing.
But do they have robot bartenders?
No, they don't have robot bartenders. What they have is
Scarlett Johansson's voice.
No, they have a combination. It's not that far in the future. It's very close. It's excuse me. It's more like Facebook has gone visual, so that you're on camera all the time. So GoPro, Facebook, and your whole life is. People see you wake up in the morning, and they know everything about
you. It's Skybook.
And it's being sold as it's a personal safety if you're attacked somewhere.
So Emma Watson gets a job with this company. Why is it called the Circle? Is that Circle the name of the company?
The Circle is the name of the company. I get you. And Steve Jobs plays this charismatic character.
Steve is in it?
Steve Jobs. I'm sorry. Oh, my God.
Tom Hanks plays a Steve Jobs-esque character. Okay, I get you.
It's like Peter Cushing. They brought
Tom Hanks plays that. And he has an assistant that's played by Patton Oswalt, who's kind of a little more in the background, and he's kind of more the business nuts and bolts character and not the big personality. Mm-hmm. But anyway, so the...
Kind of like the Slugworth.
Yeah. So it's the book was very popular and it has a big following.
I never heard
of film it. Is direct... Well, it's kind of more a little, maybe a millennial sort of thing. Yeah. It's directed by James Plausholt, who's directed The Spectacular Now and The End of the Tour. Dave Eggers is the author of the book, and he co-wrote the screenplay with the director. So that all sounds good, but I think a lot of people who saw the book might not like this adaptation because it starts out raising a lot of interesting issues about technology and privacy and how far you go, and then it goes for a kind of slightly corny ending. Which, you know, I don't know that matches up with the book. I kind of think maybe that it's been watered down, which is a little surprising considering the author is one of the co-writers.
So does it kind of become The Net or The Pelican Brief or something like that?
A thriller?
I think that's not quite that high a mark.
Oh,
I think
really?
It's a little more middle brow than that. No. But it starts out very promising, and part of that is that it becomes, you know, much more pedestrian by the end. So it's kind of a middle of the road. They didn't make it available for critics, which is usually a tip-off that there's something that's not quite
right.
It can
be.
Yeah.
Not always, though.
Yeah.
I mean, Trainspotting 2, they didn't show to us,
maybe,
and it was quite
80%
good.
80% of the time, it's a tip-off.
All right. So had you reviewed The Circle for WeirdMovieGeeks.com, how many stars out of 5 would you have given it, Kate?
3.
Kate would have given it.
Is John Boyega in this from the Star Wars, the last one? Played Finn, John Boyega? Finn from the Star Wars?
Seeing him, but the kid from Boyhood is in that. He plays a major role.
I heard that.
Emma Watson's character, her name's May. Her character's childhood friend, who's not techie at all. And,
Talk into the microphone. Okay.
Sorry.
Okay, well, good. All right, do you have anything else you want to say about The Circle?
No, can't.
All right, so I didn't see The Circle, neither did Jim. Kate did see it and liked it to a point, 3 out of 5 stars.
Yeah,
so it sounds like it could have been better.
At the most.
Still, they should have showed it to us, for goodness sake.
And if you're a fan of the book, probably skip it.
All right, and Kate also saw The Dinner.
So what's the subject at hand? You know what it is.
It's about the boys.
How much do you know?
How much do you know?
He's going to turn us in. He's going to turn us in. I know.
These boys have committed a
a horrific crime.
Well, we've got a Richard Gere double feature here today, don't we?
Yes, yeah, we had two films open here in this country, or in this area. Yeah. I think the other one we were going to talk about has been out for a while.
And Kate, you're the only one who's seen The Dinner, yeah. And it's about a dinner, right? It's kind of like My Dinner with Andre.
Well, this is a much more heated than My Dinner with Andre, and it's not... It doesn't take place all around the table. They leave the table. There are flashbacks. There's other things. And actually, in a way, that kind of makes the dinner seem a little endless because you drag out what's happening. But the director is Oren Moverman, who's I think he's a U.S.-born Israeli director, but he has foot in both worlds. And he directed Richard Gere in a film a couple of years back called Time Out of Mind, in which Richard Gere played a homeless person. And actually, I thought it was a good performance, but other people...
Did it play theaters here?
Couldn't. Yes, it did. Okay. He played Frontenac.
Didn't he do The Messenger, too?
He did.
Yeah. And the other one with Woody Harrelson, where he was the corrupt cop.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Well, in this case, Richard Gere is not playing a homeless person, but
Ramparts?
Ramparts.
Right.
So Richard Gere is playing a congressman who's running for governor. He's very well-liked. He's very personable. He has a lot of influence. And Steve Coogan plays his less successful, resentful younger brother. And the politician, Richard Gere, invites his younger brother to dinner, and the wives are there, too. So it's these two couples. Laura Linney plays...
Coogan's wife,
and Rebecca Hall plays Richard Gere's character's wife.
Ah, now Laura Linney and Richard Gere co-starred in
Primal Fear.
Primal Fear, yes.
Yeah. So it's a really good cast, and this the younger brother doesn't really want to go to this dinner, but his wife does because it's a very posh, exclusive restaurant. They couldn't possibly get in there themselves. Yeah. You have to wait months for a reservation, and it's one of those restaurants. And this is kind of part of the story. The restaurants where they make a lot of fuss over you, especially the congressman, and they bring you these highly priced items that look like sculpture more than food, and they're tiny, tiny portions. It's that kind
of a
place. Oh, yeah. And they describe it, you know, this is an artisanal cheese made
give
in
me a nice buffet.
By a cow named George or Georgia and, you know, all
he
this
listened
sort
of, to Beethoven.
Yeah, and, you know, we babied those mushrooms and, you know, all that sort of thing, which is kind of, you know, I'm a foodie, but really a lot of that's a little too much for me. This is based on a best-selling novel by a Dutch writer whose name is Herman Koch. So this is an international bestseller. So, you know, people who might be familiar with this
and
would like
I,
it.
Yeah.
It's actually a psychological thriller. Mm-hmm. The reason why the congressman is called his brother in is because although the brothers don't get along, their sons do. They're good friends, and they've gotten into trouble. Mm-hmm. And they've been involved in a crime. Their identities have not yet come out, and they're going to discuss what are we going to do about the boys.
Now, I saw this story before. Yeah. It was an Italian film originally.
It's
from
been
3 years
made
ago.
More than once. This novel has been made
and,
into
it,
a film.
It played Sliff about 3 years ago, and I think
I was
judging on it. It was called The Dinner. It's an Italian film. And,
that's the name of the novel.
Yeah, and that's, like I say, it played Sliff about at least 2 years ago, and it was up for running. I don't think we awarded it a prize, but I thought it was a pretty strong film. Now, in that film, one of the sons is a daughter, so it's like a daughter.
Isn't there a crime, a twist?
There is a crime. You know, pretty early in the film that there's a crime involved. They show a flashback of the two boys involved in this, and you know the families are trying to decide, you know, what are we going to do about this? You know, their identities are, they still don't know that their sons are the ones involved, and so are they going to the police? Are they covering it up? You know, or you know, so they're going to discuss, you know, responsibility and social issues, and the crime actually involves a homeless person, so it goes back to that issue again. I think Moverman did a fantastic job with this. I mean, it's hard to do something where you're at a dinner the whole time and you're going back and forth, but he brings in a lot of important issues and raises a lot of topics and gets really good performances out of these actors.
Now, had you seen that earlier version?
No, I had not. Okay. So I can't make a comparison of that. Well, and I haven't read the book. So.
Well, I'll have to see this new version. Yeah. I can you know, give you my thoughts.
Yeah, if you like a thoughtful kind of psychological thriller drama.
And did you review it for We Movie Geeks?
Yes, she did.
Oh, did you? How many stars did you give? No, how many stars did you give the dinner?
I think I gave it 4.
Okay. Yeah. All right. So Kate recommends The Dinner starring Richard Gere. Speaking of movies that are sort of contained in a small setting, Kate and I saw The Wall.
You get eyes on him? Where'd he come from?
I don't know!
If I were you, I would start talking, Isaac.
What do you want?
I want to get to know you.
I get one shot.
No. Second you touch that rifle, you're dead.
The Wall is from director Doug Liman, who's known for, well, I guess he started out with Swingers and a couple of comedies, and then he kind of went into action films with Mr. and Mrs. Smith. And
that
at least
Firstborn, right?
Yeah, I was going to say at least one of the Bourne films. This one takes place in Iraq, and it's about two American soldiers who are overseeing a sort of a crime scene where some contractors had been murdered, and they're sort of... They just spent 24 hours looking at these dead bodies because they're a little worried that the sniper may still be out there. And finally they decide, well, the sniper must have left by now. Big mistake. These guys, are played by John Cena and Aaron Taylor Johnson.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a little misleading. The poster says, Aaron Taylor Johnson, John Cena above the titles. After 10 minutes, John Cena's out. He's not dead. I'm not going to spoil anything, but he's unconscious for most of the rest of the film. So it's really a one-man show. They both get, like I said, they both get shot up, and Aaron Taylor Johnson's character manages to dive behind this sort of makeshift wall where the rest of the movie takes place. It's almost in real time, except there's one point where he passes out and then wakes up. I don't know how much longer later. But besides that, I think it was pretty much told in real time. It's an interesting movie, but I don't think it's a total success. It is, you know, it's contained and it's claustrophobic and it's kind of an interesting exercise, but it's not as suspenseful as you might think, and I can't really put my finger on why. It seems like with that premise, I should have been on the edge of my seat for 81 minutes, which is all it lasts. But I really wasn't. I didn't really care about this guy that much. There's no background to these characters,
mm-hmm.
So you don't really get to know them and who they are. And even throughout the movie, you really don't get to know them. And then you've got him on he's on the phone with the sniper. And at first you think the sniper is an American because this is actually based on a real character, this sniper. He was a Sunni sniper who was able to have an American accent and fool Americans into coming out into the open, and then he'd snipe them. But the sniper guy is kind of weird. He's reciting Edgar Allan Poe, and mm-hmm. he's just going on and on about his life and wanting to getting to know this Aaron Taylor Johnson. It reminded me a little of a movie that came out a few years ago called Buried, where Ryan Reynolds was in a coffin, oh, man. And he had a phone, and he was talking to – he had been – held hostage, and he's talking to his commanders, and he's talking to his mom and things like that, because there's just a lot of conversations between this sniper and this soldier. It's okay. It's pretty well done, but I didn't like it as nearly as much as I thought it was. Like I say, it lacks suspense.
I thought it reminded me of a different movie that has similar premise called Phone Booth, in which a guy is held hostage by a sniper. He's on the phone
Colin
the whole
Farrell,
time.
Yeah.
But once in this movie, it's just two people talking. One person you see and one person on a phone. So it has that sort of structure. And you're right. The major flaw is that you don't know enough about the American soldier before he gets pinned down. If we knew more about his backstory, maybe we would care more.
Yeah.
You learn a little more about the sniper, but you never see him. And I think that's why it gets to be dull. And it does make you feel like you've been pinned down, even though it's a fairly short movie.
Yeah.
If they'd had more character development for you do learn something about him at some point, but if they'd given you more reason to care about him besides just being a young American, it would have been a better film.
You got to admire Doug Liman for trying something different and doing this exercise. And
I didn't think it was that different because I think that's been done before.
And there's no political subtext to the film either. It's just about it's just about survival. But like I say, it's not as good as I would hope it would be. Are you reviewing it for WeirdMovieGeeks.com?
Yes, I am.
And how many stars are you going to give it there, Kate?
You know, I think I'll give it 2.5.
That's about what
that's
about what I would give it. Yeah, it's well made, but not as good as it should have been.
I think Doug Liman's very talented, but it's not his best film by a long
And he's got another movie coming out in September, Doug Liman does, with Tom Cruise. It's an action thing about some sort of CIA rogue agent or something. So he'll be back to what he does best. Let's review another movie. The second half of our Richard Gere double feature was Norman. I did not see Norman, but both of you guys did. Who wants to talk about Norman?
You know Norman Oppenheimer?
No, I don't.
Congressman, very nice, nice to meet you.
Mr. Todd would like to speak with you. Would you mind joining me?
You were in Arthur Todd's house.
Yeah. This is my private home. No, you can't just walk in it and sit at my table.
Oh, I guess I could probably do that. I think you...
I could interview
you. Yeah, that's you, since you talked about The Circle so much and about his last movie, The Dinner.
Right, and I saw that this director is an Israeli director, yeah. Joseph Cedar. This is his first English language film, although a big portion of the film is actually in Hebrew with subtitles.
Yeah.
His previous film, last year, he had a really clever film called The Footnote about these two... Torah scholars. It's a father and son, and they're battling out for an award, and it's a comedy, and it's just very inventive, and there's some of that sense in this film.
Well, yeah, there's a comedic element in this. Richard, it sounds like, is playing the opposite of his character from The Dinner. Mm-hmm. He is playing this sort of schlubby guy that you would probably see walking around the financial districts of your major cities, and he calls himself, I guess, a business consultant.
Right.
But basically, he's a schmoozer. He's a shorer, I guess, would be another phrase for
it. The term that some people use in New York is he's a fixer. He's a guy who can get you an introduction or a hotel, restaurant.
That's in the
reservation.
Extended title. Yeah,
he says.
He says. I know this person. He's a and you see him accosting Dan Stevens, the Beast, as he's doing his morning jog because he can't get through to him via his secretary. His secretary is blocking him, of course, mm-hmm. and he's trying to put people together. And he's imposing quite a bit on his nephew, who's played by Michael Sheen, because he wants to get in with these high-level executives, and somehow he ends up at sort of a conference, an international conference, mm-hmm. about the energy policies, mm-hmm. and he hears a speaker named Eshel, who's played by a terrific actor named Lior Shekinsky,
an Israeli actor, who was actually in The Footnote, too.
Yeah, he's very good at it, and Gears decides, his Norman character, decides to kind of stalk him, and he starts following around the city, and he sees him lingering at a shoe store window, or it's a high-end men's clothing store. Very high-end. And he follows him in there, and Eshel finds out how expensive the shoes are. He says, well, public servants can't be wearing these kind of shoes. And Gere says, well, Norman says, well, let me treat you to this. And it's interesting to hear the whole audience gasp when they see the price tag on these things.
And you can virtually see Norman gasp because these shoes are over $1,000.
Yes.
This guy barely makes a living.
Well, you wonder how he does make a living, actually. He doesn't seem to really have a home in it. But when they're about to part, after the purchase, he says, well, there's going to be this dinner party that this big exec is going to throw, and I'd like you to be my guest at, and this is a way for him to get into the dinner party. And Eshel says, yeah, I text me about it later on. And then later on, when Eshel is back at his hotel, his consultants, his supervisors say, do not get hooked up with this guy. And so Richard Gere's character does go to this high-end party, and when Eshel doesn't show up, he's pretty much kicked out.
Yeah.
Flash forward 3 years, and Eshel is...
Well, let me add one more thing. At this point, Eshel is a politician kind of on the decline. He'd had more power and influence, and he's now a very low level, and he's feeling very low about himself, which is part of how Norman is able to kind of make a connection. Mm-hmm. He does something that makes him feel good, and there's a scene in which he hugs his shoes,
which
is very funny.
Isn't this movie strange. Like two and a half hours?
It's about 2.25, something like that. But flash forward 3 years, Eshel is the prime minister of Israel. There's a big reception in New York City. Norman is there with his nephew, and they're in the reception line. He says, well, he's not going to remember me. And lo and behold, Eshel does. He warmly embraces Norman and says, you're going to be my connection to New York City. And now Norman is on the opposite side of the glass ceiling, I guess you would say. Everyone's coming up to him and wanting him to help him out. And the rest of the film is all about him sort of doing a juggling act. Eshel wants Norman to try to get his son into the Harvard Business School.
Yeah.
His rabbi wants him to help with the funds to save the synagogue.
And the rabbi is played by Steve Buscemi, of all people.
And he's just torn on all
sides. Steve Buscemi is the rabbi.
That's right.
Yes. But Heschel gets involved in a scandal in over in Israel, and they need to find someone to sort of pin the blame on. And guess who they're circling around?
Yeah, yes. And Norman kind of he's unaware in who he's talking to, and kind of steps in. Right.
Cut to the chase. Is this movie any good?
I thought it was very good, but it's very dry. It's very European.
And that opens this weekend?
No, it opened last Friday.
Oh, it opened last Friday.
Yeah. And I'm about halfway on the fence on it. There's some of it I kind of enjoy. Some of it's a little too whimsical. Like I say, you never really know what the deal is with Norman, what he's doing besides just shuffling around the city. It's a good performance by Richard Gere. Mm-hmm. If you're a fan of Gere's, it's a terrific work by him. He's taking more interesting parts now that he's getting older. And mm-hmm. I say, this Lior Ashkenazi Ashkenazi, and he's very good in it.
And if you're a fan of the director's previous work, if you've seen Israeli films, you're going to like this one. He cast non-Jewish people in all the American roles, all the New Yorkers, even though they're playing Jewish characters.
Like Steve Buscemi.
Yeah, but
and
then
Michael
all
Sheen.
Or Michael Sheen. And all the Israelis are actually played by Israelis. And he's making a cultural comment about the difference between Israeli culture and New York Jewish culture.
And who reviewed this? That we reviewed
that was me. And I think I gave it 2.5, two maybe 3, something like that.
See, and I reviewed it for the Jewish Light and gave it.
But one of my problems is Charlotte Gainsborough is being promoted in, and her character is kind of underwritten. She's
she comes in kind of at the end, and she's.
And she's an Israeli agent, and she helps bring down.
Right, she's a government watcher.
So it's kind of an odd role, I thought. The role is kind of underwritten, but all in all, I would say if you're a fan of Richard Gere and kind of interested in world politics, then I think you'd enjoy Norman. But it just kind of meanders a little bit for me. That's why I gave it the lower rating.
All right. So Jim was kind of. Was kind of up the middle with Norman, and Kate liked it more than Jim did. Read Kate's review over at the Jewish Light and read Jim's review at WeAreMovieGeeks.com. Let's move on. Did you guys want to say anything more about Norman?
No, okay. Great New York locations.
There you go. Let's move on to the number one box office champ, $145 million over the weekend, was Guardians of the Galaxy. No big surprise. Jim reviewed Guardians of the Galaxy at WeAreMovieGeeks.com. And gave it a whopping 4.5 stars.
No! Now that's the button that will kill everyone! Try again.
I am Groot.
Mm-hmm.
I am Groot.
Uh-huh.
I am Groot.
No!
I think it was better than the first one, Jim?
I think it's a little different in tone. It's got an emotional push to it. I saw it a second time last night, and I think the story of Peter Quill is sort of the heartbeat of the film, and it's much more of a conflict. The first one was about preventing this character from getting this all-powerful device. Here, the character pretty much already has it, and he's trying to seduce Peter Quill to join him, so it's a more personal story. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but still, it's got some gangbusters action sequences. It's very entertaining, very funny. I think I said my only problem with it is that they split up the team for a lot of the film, but it has a real kick to it, and there is a demise at the end that's very emotionally riveting.
I agree. Yeah.
And boy, it's nice to look at. I saw it on the IMAX 3D screen last night. It's just gorgeous.
Did you say Ronnie's or?
I saw it at Ronnie's. Yeah. You saw it at Chesterfield, I believe, right? And what really struck me about the look of the film is a lot of futuristic, space things. Well, we'll see this in a couple weeks, probably with Alien Covenant. Everything's kind of dark and dreary. And here, when we even before we get to Ego's planet, it's just eye-popping. I compared it to a double-page spread from Heavy Metal magazine from the early 70s. It's got a lot of great eye candy, and I tell you, it's very very entertaining. I think it's just as good, if not a little better than the first one.
I liked it a little bit better. I like that they gave Yondu such a big, major, really central role.
Oh yeah,
he was one of probably my favorite character from the first one. I'm a big fan of Michael Rooker, and you didn't mention my favorite character. They put Sylvester Stallone in the Marvel universe. It's not a very big part, but it's amazing how well Sly fits into the Marvel universe. Yeah, they just need to put Chuck Norris in a Marvel movie, and we'll be set.
Well, but you get lots of Stan Lee.
This is a Tango and Cash reunion, even though they don't have any scenes together. But we should mention that Kate reminded me that the villain in it, kind of, or that one of the major characters is Kurt Russell playing Ego. And they do one of the I guess it's going to be a recurring bit in Marvel movies, the enhanced CGI facelift flashback.
Yeah, right. Yeah,
and
the young Kurt Russell.
Oh, it is glorious. He is just a blow-dried, fluff-haired beauty.
I'm just glad they didn't cast Wiley Russell as the young Kurt Russell.
Oh, my gosh.
Well,
he
looks so little like him.
But, and I liked the movie, too, and I thought it was terrifically entertaining. I didn't think it was better than the first one. But it was so entertaining, it just didn't matter. Yeah. It doesn't matter that it's better or it's not a disappointment. It's a wonderful sequel. It's one of the most entertaining films I've seen this year. As far as an action, just have fun sort of film.
I thought some of the nostalgia seemed a little forced. Every scene demands a 70s rock song. I'm surprised they're not selling the soundtrack CD in the concession stand at the theaters.
The soundtrack has an emotional connection with Peter Quill. This is his only remembrance of his mother.
Right.
So this is one of our critics' friends was really, really going on about how the soundtrack was trying to be cutesy and evoke stuff, and it was a cheap laugh or whatever. So, no, there's a purpose to the soundtrack. Right.
And that was the case with the first one, too, cheesy music, the cheesy soundtrack is, it has to do with his mother and his what memories he has of his childhood.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So they just build on that. I thought that was a great use of
it. It also has a cameo by David Hasselhoff.
Yeah. Well, spoiler, for goodness
sake. I just hope the Hoff has a cameo in Baywatch, doggone it. He's going to do a cameo in Guardians. He better do a cameo in Baywatch.
And I forgot to mention how entertaining Dave Bautista is, again, as Drax the Destroyer. And they even give him a little bit of a romance, and it's kind of, he's trying to resist it. It's a very funny
Well, she's
bit.
So hideous.
Yes, but she's beautiful on the inside. That's a terrific new character named Mantis by an actress named Pom Klima. Clementine, I believe is her name, but she's great as this empathic character, and she's sort of the right hand woman of Ego in the film, and their romance is very good. Of course, you might be concerned that they'd spend too much time on Baby Groot because he's so adorable, but they spend just enough time.
I thought that was
there.
Balanced. Did the really right balanced. Amount. You got enough of Rocket and his smart aleck stuff. Bradley Cooper is great as the voice,
and you get a little of the tragic side of Rocket too later on in the film, but it's if you love the first film, you'll love this one. I think the 3D is terrific in it. I mentioned in my review, if you get a chance to see it on the biggest screen you can with the best sound and in 3D, because they do a lot of little tricks with the Yondu's
and James Gunn
one
gave
of the
his,
rare things.
James Gunn gave his brother Sean a good meaty role as well.
He's very good in it.
And I just saw another James Gunn movie. What was the one with the
Super?
The one where everybody's getting murdered in the everybody's getting murdered in the office building.
Oh, the Belko experiment?
Yes, Sean Gunn was in that and was just horrible in that. He's actually quite good in this Guardians of the Galaxy.
Oh, so James didn't direct that one.
He wrote it and produced the
Belko experiment. Yeah. But I think it's a great film. Stay for all the little end credit sequences.
There's quite a few
end credits. Stay for the end credits.
And I will say, for Marvel fans, there's another alien race that we'll get to see that's very familiar to us comic fans. You don't have to be a huge Marvel Comics buff to enjoy it, but it's terrific.
All right, so we all liked Guardians of the Galaxy 2, even me, who didn't really care for the first one.
How many
stars? What do we see in this week?
I give it 4.5.
You give it 4.5? I'd give it 3.5. How many would you give it, Kate?
I'd give it 4.5, I think.
Yeah. Okay, all right, well, good. So it's going to continue to make a lot of money, which is more than I can probably say for King Arthur. King Arthur is what we're seeing tonight. King Arthur and his magic sword or something like that?
Yeah.
Legend of the Sword or something.
Guy Ritchie and Charlie Hunnam.
He's hoping for another Sherlock Holmes, so it's maybe another man from Uncle.
I hope I'm surprised,
but I have very low expectations for this King Arthur movie we're seeing tonight, unfortunately. We'll see. And then tomorrow night, Jim's seeing Goldie Hawn and
Amy Schumer.
Amy Schumer. Oh, you're going to
Snatched.
Snatched. Wasn't there a Snatched directed by Guy Ritchie? with Brad Pitt?
Just Snatch.
Oh, is that just Snatch? Oh, okay.
Yes,
okay.
Yes. But this is directed by Jonathan Levine, who we who directed 50-50 and Warm Bodies. Okay. And,
two movies I didn't like.
And The Night Before, which I bet you enjoyed somewhat. That was the one set on Christmas Eve.
I didn't like that one
either.
Okay, this guy is 0 for 3 in my book.
Oh. And in this case, Snatched means kidnapping, right?
That's right. It's south of the border somewhere, I guess. So I've got some good expectations. It's written by the woman that co-wrote Bridesmaids, Kate DiBold.
That's promising. Goldie Hawn sure looks like she's been out in the sun too long when I watch the trailers.
Well, she does play the
thing.
Mother.
So. I guess. All right. So, and then that's tomorrow night. I'm not going to that, but you guys both are. So, Jim, you're reviewing Snatched?
I believe so.
Weird Movie Geeks. Yes. So look for Jim's review of Snatched Thursday night at Weird Movie Geeks. And then Alien, what's the?
Alien Covenant.
Covenant, that's it. Yeah. I think Covenant's the name of the ship. Yeah. And it's a direct sequel to the one from
Prometheus.
For Prometheus, yeah.
I hope it's better.
It's another
They say
movie.
It's like Prometheus with aliens.
Yeah. I always thought it was a reboot of the 79 film from
the
looks
of it. No, it's a direct
sequel.
It's got Naomi Rapace.
Really?
I thought Catherine Waterston looks a lot like Ripley in those trailers.
I thought it looked very much like the Alien series. So yeah.
Well, it takes place between Prometheus and Alien.
Mm. Yeah. So that actually comes out the 19th, I believe.
Yeah, that's actually, but we can review that, I guess, next Monday. And then also Chuck opens Friday. I've seen Chuck. We were just talking about Sylvester Stallone. Chuck is about this guy named Chuck. I can't think of his last
name. Chuck Wapner?
Yeah. No relation to Judge Wapner. In fact, I think it's Wepner.
Oh, okay.
Wepner.
That's right. Sorry.
And he's the guy that Sylvester Stallone very loosely based Rocky on. And sure enough, this guy was chosen to fight Muhammad Ali right after the Rumble in the Jungle just because they were looking for a white guy, and he was the best white guy that they could find. So this Chuck Wepner guy fought Muhammad Ali, and they expected Muhammad Ali to win, you know, in a couple of rounds. But Chuck went the distance, and then Stallone made this movie loosely based on Chuck Wepner. And then so this movie that's coming out next Friday is based on the story of Chuck Wepner. So it's very interesting. I've seen it already, and Sylvester Stallone is a character in this movie. I can't think of this actor who plays Stallone, but he really nails it. He doesn't look that much like him, but just everything else about him really is really good. And Stallone actually comes off pretty good. He comes off as a really nice guy in this film. Well, we can talk more about Chuck next week.
So it opens the 19th, right?
It opens the 19th, is that right?
And there's one more opening.
Oh, The Quiet Passion opens? When's that open?
That opens
Friday?
This Friday?
Oh,
I'm sorry. Yeah.
Okay.
It opens the same week as King Arthur.
That's Cynthia. Friday.
Okay,
that's
Cynthia
Friday.
Nixon.
And that's Cynthia Nixon playing Emily Dickinson, and she does a wonderful job.
Oh, you've already seen it?
It was at SLIFF last year, and I saw it then, and it's this terrific film. This is a different view of Emily Dickinson than you've ever seen.
I don't think I've ever seen any view of Emily Dickinson.
Well, you know, all the stereotypes about the reclusive woman that never spoke to anybody and didn't leave her house. You know, and she is smart, sarcastic, you know, just really a very different character than you expect. And it's directed by a British director, Terence Davies, who also did House of Mirth and The Deep Blue Sea. And it's beautifully acted. It's, you know, all the appearance, all the sets and costumes are gorgeous. But it's the depth of the character that
Remind me who Cynthia Nixon is again. The name rings a bell.
Oh, well, she was best known for Sex and the City. Probably.
Probably.
No wonder I don't.
And this, you know, and this will change your mind. If that's your idea of who this actress is.
Is she the one that's married to William Macy?
No, that's Felicity Huffman.
Okay.
Yeah.
I get all these actors.
Now, she does a fabulous job. You'll see this woman. He has real acting chops. And this guy, this film does not shy away from unpleasant facts of life in the 19th century.
Such as
the way that there was no medical.
They're talking about indoor plumbing.
Oh, yeah. Well, they didn't really go into that, but it was kind of like death was there, you know, and there wasn't much you can do about it. And, you know, some of this was, and you know, the restrictions on the life of women in the era and other stuff like that.
Right.
And the fact that it's so frank that way and so, you know, personal with her without all the fluff and assumptions you might think, and you'll have new respect for her.
What's the name of this movie again?
It's called A Quiet Passion.
And are you reviewing it?
I am.
For Weird Movie Geeks?
Yes, I am.
This Friday?
That's right.
And how many stars are you going to be giving A Quiet Passion?
Oh, you know, 4.5 to 5. I haven't quite decided. I'm going to take a look at it a second time. It's been months since I've seen it, so I'll see if
I still feel
that way.
We don't do the quarter system, so no 4 3/4. Don't try to get away with that.
After I watch it a second time, I'll see which way I'm leaning.
All right, so look for Kate's review of A Quiet Passion. She liked it. I didn't know it was opening this weekend. It wasn't on my list, but that's okay. Okay, we're done reviewing movies. Now let's talk about some local stuff going on in the local movie scene. There's always lots going on in St. Louis. I did my 16mm double feature show last week, and I've got another one coming up. It's going to be June 6th, and I will announce right now what I am showing, although I did announce it on Facebook and at the show last week. At 8 o'clock, we're going to show Stir Crazy.
Only these two guys could dress up like woodpeckers and get framed for robbing a bank. Stir Crazy.
That's right. We're bad.
Starring Gene Wilder and Richard Pryor. I've shown a Richard Pryor movie, and we've shown three Gene Wilders. Yeah. Actually, the fourth Gene Wilder movie we've shown. Stir Crazy was a huge hit in 1980. I mean, everybody saw Stir Crazy.
That's Sidney Poitier directed.
That's right.
Yeah,
who also directed Hanky Panky with Wilder.
Yeah, that's right.
And then there was another one a couple years later, like See No Evil, Hear No Evil or something, Wilder was deaf and Pryor was blind or something, and they were trying to solve a murder.
Kevin Spacey's in it, I think.
So that's first.
Another You was the last one.
Okay. And then, so that's at 8 o'clock. This is all at the Way Out Club, by the way. The Way Out Club is at 2525 Jefferson, at the corner of Jefferson Broadway in South St. Louis. And at 10 o'clock, I'm going to show The 7-Ups. Have you ever seen The 7-Ups before?
I've never seen the whole thing. Oh, no, really? I remember that that came out after French Connection, so it was kind of a quasi follow-up to
it. It was a spiritual sequel, and it has some of the same cast. Roy Scheider and Tony LoBianco. Roy Scheider plays basically the same character he played or a very similar character he played in The French Connection. It's directed by Philip D'Antoni, who won the Oscar for producing The French Connection. It's the only movie he directed.
Oh.
But at the center of this movie is one of the top 4 or 5 best car chases in cinema. This thing is amazing. So watch that at the Way Out Club on June 6th. Stir Crazy and The 7-Ups. I'll be showing Stir Crazy first. That is, of course, free, but we do set out a jar for the National Children's Cancer Society. Wednesday is the Classics on the Loop film series. Kate and I saw, what did we see last week? Oh, The Third Man.
Yes.
There was over 100 people at The Third Man.
Was it bigger than the crowd for Sunset Boulevard?
It was about the same.
At least as big.
It was about the same. I think both of them were right at about 100, which is great. That's great that 100 people come out and park and pay and get out of the house to see a movie that they could watch on streaming or something. So congrats to the guys over at the Tivoli. This week is Touch of Evil, which stars Charlton Heston as a Mexican, which I don't think today they would put, they would cast George Clooney or Brad Pitt as a Mexican, but back in the late 50s.
Hey, they got Richard Gere as a little Jewish guy, so there you go.
But that's deliberately.
Touch of Evil is directed by Orson Welles. This is the second Orson Welles movie in a row, I guess they're showing. Although he didn't direct The Third Man. Who else is in it? Marlena Dietrich?
It's Janet Leigh.
Janet Leigh's beautiful in it. Zsa Zsa Gabor, who we just lost, is in it.
Dennis
Weaver is in it. He plays a really weird character in it.
Akim Tamaroff?
Yes.
Yeah.
He's a strange one in
there. It's a really classic, although they're showing us freaking Alien that night. So I'm going to have to miss it. That is too bad. All right. So that's Wednesday at 7 o'clock at the Tivoli. $7 will get you in to see Touch of Evil, and I highly, highly, highly recommend it. Next week is Chinatown. I'm not going to miss that. I don't care what they're showing us.
Neither.
Unless they're showing us Baywatch. That's the only reason I will miss Chinatown next Wednesday is if the Baywatch
comes. Tom, I have a feeling they're not going to show us Baywatch.
No. Megan and Allied said they are showing us Baywatch.
They are? Okay. There you go.
It's going to be the best movie of 2017, guys.
Come on.
I've already made my top 10 list. I've already written my review.
No.
It's in your mind.
That's right. All right. Midnight at the Tivoli this weekend. My Neighbor Totoro. That's one of these Miyazakis, which always pack them in. So I don't know much about it. I never stick around for these Miyazaki films. I don't think I've ever seen a Miyazaki film, to be honest. But people love them. People love them. It really brings them out. So My Neighbor Totoro. Saturday morning over at the High Point, they have their classic monthly film festival, The Poseidon Adventure.
That's the way out. That's our only chance.
Don't listen to him.
We've got to stay here till help arrives.
Help from where?
From the captain? He's dead.
I watched all night at my 16mm double feature night. Everybody loves the Poseidon Adventure, 1972. And they ever actually, you know, usually the high point, they don't announce their classic movie till like 3 or 4 days beforehand. But they've already announced their July and their August movies as well. Maybe they got some sort of package deal or something. But July is going to be Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid.
From Fox also.
Yeah, and August is going to be the Oscar-winning Best Picture from 1967, In the Heat of the Night.
Well, that's Midnight Artists.
So. Yeah, so there you go. I'll be talking more about those. Those are usually introduced by Harry Hamm, but I always show up in case Harry doesn't show up. A lot of times I'll get tapped to introduce them.
Like
as well.
Georgie Jessel. You're just there. I am. You're ready to take the stage.
I love it. Yeah. Well, I'll introduce my neighbor Tortora at midnight and then possibly to Poseidon Adventure in the morning. So twice in one day. And then I took my daughter, my 17-year-old daughter, to her first midnight movie last weekend. Did you see our prom photo?
I saw that. Yes.
Yeah, that was Carrie at the Moolah as part of the Late Night Grindhouse last weekend, and they had a prom photo booth set up in the Mini Moolah. And Carrie was great on the big screen. I hadn't seen it on the big screen. I probably saw it at the drive-in a couple times in the early 80s, but every scene of that movie is amazing.
It's one of the very best Stephen King adaptations, yeah, that's for sure.
But next Late Night Grindhouse, which is in 2 weeks... So that'll be the 18th and 19th. It's going to be Planet of the Vampires. Planet of the Vampires is an Italian horror film from the great Italian director Mario Bava. Yeah. It seems like a slightly odd choice for Late Night Grindhouse. I think Andy was trying to make a point about how much Ridley Scott borrowed some imagery and elements from Planet of the Vampires for the Alien series.
Is that one with Barry Sullivan?
Yes,
is
Barry Sullivan and Eva Bartok. It's really good. It's very atmospheric, but it's really a slow film, and I'm just wondering if that crowd that sort of likes blood and gore and action is going to be able to stay awake. But I'm excited about it. So it was made in 1963, so that is in 2 weeks at the Moolah. And what else? Last night I was supposed to have free tickets, but I ended up not going Travolta again in Saturday Night Fever. That's the Fathom event, and it'll be again this Wednesday at 2 p.m. and 7 p.m. Check your local listings for that. You can't go wrong with Saturday Night Fever. And then Jonathan Demme passed away. We're going to talk more about him here in a second, but Webster University has scheduled a Jonathan Demme tribute.
Nice.
Wonderful.
Yeah.
When is that?
It's June 9th, 10th, and 16th, and the three movies that they picked seem a little odd to me, although I'm sort of excited. I love Caged Heat, one of the seminal women's prison movies with Barbara Steele as the warden. You can't go wrong with that. And it's got Erica Gavin and Rainbow Smith and Roberta Collins and a lot of great, sexy 70s actresses in it. So that'll be June 9th, and I think 8 o'clock at Webster U's Moore Auditorium. And then the next night, this is an even stranger choice, Crazy Mama.
Yes.
Which is another one of his real early Roger Corman films. That one stars Cloris Leachman. And I've never seen that one on the big screen. I'm looking forward to Crazy Mom. It does seem like an odd choice. Donnie Most, I think, plays like her son in the film. Ralph Malf on the Happy Days show. And Linda Pearl, I think, is in it. It's got a weird cast. It's got like kind of a TV cast.
Yeah.
And I think it was just PG. I don't think it's a very particularly raunchy film. So they're showing those two early Jonathan Demme movies. You'd think they'd show one of the documentaries, Stop Making Sense or something like that.
Yeah.
But the third movie they're showing is Melvin and Howard, which would be really great to see again.
Oh, yeah.
And Mary Steenburgen won an Oscar for that. And Paula Matt plays a guy named Melvin who picked up Howard Hughes while hitchhiking one day. And Howard Hughes supposedly left him his fortune. And it was a true story. Interesting, very interesting story, and a very wonderful film.
Oh, yeah.
So,
So
go to Webster U.
Oh, Jason Robards is Howard Hughes.
Yeah.
Fantastic.
Really great. Yeah, really great movie. So RIP to Mr. Jonathan Demme. He won the Oscar for directing Silence of the Lambs back in, was it 90 or 91?
90, I think. Well, yeah, 90. The Oscars were 91, yeah.
Yeah,
so.
And I didn't see that coming. I guess he had some sort of cancer and died in, how old was he, 72 or something?
71, yeah.
Great career. Started with Corman, Right. Crazy Mom and Caged Heat, of course, and stuff and
he,
like that.
He was a director. He had great range. He had a prolific career, great range in the kind of films he made besides Crazy Mom and stuff like that. He did Silence of the Lambs, Philadelphia, Adaptation, very different
stuff. Things like Married to the Mob
he
and
did
Something
comedies
Wild.
Like Married to Mom and Something Wild. And he also did documentaries like Stop Making Sense, about the Talking Heads, Neil Young, Mandela. Yeah. So, you know, he was all over the place and
he
made just, a tremendous number of films.
Yeah, he just did one with Justin Timberlake, didn't he? Yeah, documentary. That was maybe his last credit.
Some of them were memorable.
His last narrative
others.
Was Ricky and the Flash.
Unfortunately.
And then he did the one with Anne Hathaway, Rachel Gets Married.
Rachel Getting Married.
That was a pretty interesting film. Yeah. Different role for her, too.
Yeah, that's too bad. So
an impressive filmmaker, though.
Yeah.
Really a legendary filmmaker.
Yeah. He did another one with Peter Fonda. I saw it at the theater. It was called Fighting Mad. And it was kind of a Walking Tall type thing with Lynn Lowry playing his wife. What else can we say about old Jonathan Demme? That's too bad.
Watch one of his movies there. You'll have a good time.
Yep. He's a New Yorker.
Really? Okay. Jonathan Demme, R.I.P. Also, these beautiful 70s actresses we talked a little bit about, Yvonne Molnar a couple weeks ago, although we ended up losing the last third of our podcast. I apologize for that. Dahlia Lavi died. She worked with a lot of interesting directors and actors. She was in The Silencers, which is one of the Matt Helm.
The first one.
Yeah. Matt Helm, Dean Martin movies. We just talked about Mario Bava's Planet of the Vampires. She was in a wonderful, just really sexy horror film that Mario Bava directed in 1963 called The Whip and the Body, which was this really kinky movie with Christopher Lee and her in this castle on the beach, and it's just crazy. A lot of S&M in that one. I used to show, that was in the public domain. I used to show in the middle of the night. It was called What, which was kind of a weird title. But you can get it on uncut on DVD. It's Whip and the Body. She's also in Casino Royale in 1968.
Yeah, with Woody Allen. It's had a lot of scenes with him in it, I believe.
But she was an Israeli actress. Just gorgeous. Made the cover of Video Watchdog, even. Tim Lucas tracked her down. She sort of disappeared. Tim Lucas tracked her down a couple years ago, and she was living in Asheville, North Carolina, of all places.
Really?
She settled down there with her fourth or fifth husband, and he did an interview for Video Watchdog. She's also in Lord Jim with Peter O'Toole.
And Catlow with Sean Connery.
And Yul Brynner.
Ten Little Indians. I think they're one of the Agatha Christie adaptations from the 60s.
The one with Oliver Reed, yeah.
Yeah.
So, she wasn't a major star by any stretch. Most people probably haven't heard of her, but I do want to recognize these women, these glamour girls from the 60s and 70s who are starting to die off, which is too bad. All right, well, we're going to have to wrap this show up. So RIP to Jonathan Demme and Dahlia Lavi. We'll come back next week, and we can review King Arthur and Snatched and Chuck and the new Alien, and we'll talk about all kinds of stuff because that's what we do here at the We Are Movie Geeks podcast. But for now, I'm Tom Stockman.
Jim Batts.
Kate Marquis.
And be sure to listen again next week.
Black leather, rock. Black leather, ta-ta-ta. Black leather. Oh, nutty state. Hello, darling.
Black leather, rock, ta-ta-ta. Black leather, hip. I got that feeling. Black leather, rock. Black leather, kill. I got that feeling. Black leather rock. Black leather, smash. Black leather, crash. Black leather, kill. I got that feeling. Black leather rock.
Forward into battle, there, chaps.
Oh, I guess I'm out.
No, I'm not. 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 I'm